I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Welcome, it is John and Elio. This is the Just the Two of Us episode, and this is a special Just the Two of Us episode. Many years ago, Patrick interviewed me for the SF Signal podcast when I had a new album out. Now I turn the tables and I'm going to interview Patrick because he's got a book out. And before we get into maybe the specifics of the book, let's just throw it out there. It is Into the Fire, Samantha Cain, Volume 1. Or just as Samantha Cain 1, yeah. And it is available through Wordfire Press. You can buy it as a ebook or as a trade paperback. Currently, I bought it for $5.99 on Amazon. I don't know if that's the going price everywhere or what have you, but if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know Patrick's a writer. He's self-published some things. This is his first through a publisher, so we're very excited about that, and it's out there. So I thought we would get into sort of Patrick's life as a writer, not so much as a podcaster, but as peel back the layers of Patrick Hester a little bit. So did I get all the naming and everything right, Patrick?
I do want to throw out there that so I was recently invited to teach at Superstars of Writing, and as part of that I got to meet a lot of really cool people, including Jim Butcher. I've interviewed Jim Butcher for SF Signal, but this was the first time I've ever met him in person, and I purposely kept him at arm's length because it's one of those things where it's like he's one of my favorite authors and I didn't want to ruin that. But one of the things that he said on stage during one of his Q&A's was the best thing that you can do as a writer is be yourself and be nice and just be a good person. Don't be a self-centered jerk. Don't be a self-interested jerk. Just be yourself, be nice, be cool, right? And he said that's the best marketing you can do. And it will eventually, you know, pay you back by being a nice person. And that meant a lot to me because I've tried to do that as a writer and as a podcaster. And to tie that to Samantha Cain is that I met Galen Dara at Worldcon several years ago, and Galen and I struck up a friendship, and that friendship has lasted, I'm happy to say. And so when you look at that book, you will see just an incredible cover that was done by Galen Dara. And I had the opportunity to have her do that cover because of that friendship and because of meeting her and being nice and all that good stuff. So that means a lot to me that cover's on there, because every time someone looks at that book, they go, ooh.
Well, and as we've spoken about on the show a million times, covers are really important.
Yes.
More so than I think people think, particularly in genre, I think. And I think it's a wonderful cover, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. It's sitting on my Kindle right there, Patrick. I'm showing Patrick the Kindle right there. It's right next to one of the Scalzi books that I bought this morning. But Patrick, what I want to ask you, because there's, you know, we've been doing this show for a long time, and I know a lot about you, but there's a lot I don't know about you. And one of the things that I'm very curious about is, how did you get started writing? Like, did you write when you were a kid? Is it something that came later in life? How does your love of writing begin?
I was always a reader because my mom was a reader. And my mom will tell you the stories that as a 2- and 3-year-old kid, I would pick up her magazines and sit there and open them up and sit on the couch staring at them. And if someone asked me what I was doing, I would tell them that I was reading. So, you know, reading was huge for me and in our family. I didn't start to try to write anything until sophomore year in high school.
What kind of stuff were you writing then?
Well, and it basically came down to I was in college prep English. And, you know, as indicated, they're prepping you for college. They're trying to get you ready for the kind of course load and workload you're going to be having in college. And part of that is, you know, writing text papers, writing term papers, you know, and also doing some creative writing. And I have told this story once or twice before, but Mr. McKenzie was my sophomore year college prep English teacher, and he was gone for a couple of days. And a substitute came in with this assignment and said, you have a creative writing assignment. You have to write a story about a secret identity. It's your secret identity. And as part of the project, you're not allowed to sign it or put your name on it anywhere. It's truly a secret. And write this little short story about your secret identity. And mine was that, and this is kind of funny given the environment that we live in today in America, but I wrote a story about taking over America by becoming the president of the United States through subliminal messaging in textbooks that kids used in school. That I was like my secret identity was that I was this supervillain who had figured out how to put subliminal messages in all of the textbooks in schools, in American schools, that basically when the kids were using the textbooks, they came to trust and respect me through the subliminal messaging in the textbooks. And so when they were old enough to vote, I would run for president and they would all vote for me and I would become president and take over.
Nice. Prescient.
And I turned that in. And the next day, the substitute teacher said that as he was going through all these different stories, that he wanted to talk about his least favorite and his most favorites. And his single most favorite story was mine. And so that made me feel really good. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. Someone liked my story. And he just gushed about it and thought it was really creative and wonderful and all this kind of stuff. And then the next day, Mr. McKenzie came in and he said, hey, I've gone through all these papers and I want to talk about my favorites and the ones that I thought were ultimate crap. And he goes, the worst one in the whole pile is this one. And he held up mine. And so that was my first experience with, you know, kind of critics and editors, at least, you know, and how everybody has their own opinion and their own tastes. And one person loved it and the other person didn't. But it didn't deter me. I thought, oh, this is really cool. I still like this. And I was a voracious reader of Star Trek novels. And so I, through a roundabout way, came to the attention of an editor of a Star Trek fanzine called the Helgard Social Register. Helgard being the planet that Lieutenant Savick was born on. And so the entire thing is about Savick. And it's stories with Savick in them. And he asked me to write a Savick story. And so I did. And it became the cover story for his next issue of the Helgard Social Register. And that felt really good to me because I was like, wow, I wrote this story and someone liked it enough that they printed it.
And that was while you were still in high school.
Yes. And that's when I got hooked and just thought, this is something that I can do. And so the first few things that I wrote, kind of like I took the same path as Shauna McGuire and other authors, and I started writing fan fiction. And since I was such a huge Star Trek fan and I'd read most of the Star Trek novels at that time from Pocket, it felt natural to write Star Trek stories. So that's what I did. I just started writing these Star Trek stories. And at the time, there wasn't really an internet. There was no place to share these stories. It was just me sitting there with a manual typewriter, not an electric one, a manual one, typing out stories. And I kept them in little file folders and no one ever read them. And that's all I did. And then the first Gulf War happened and my friends and I had graduated high school and a couple of them went into the military just because we all lived in an area and weren't particularly rich. We were in fact quite poor and it was a way for them to go to college was to, you know, the GI Bill. So a couple of them went off into the military. I did not. And, while they were away, another friend of mine and I thought, wouldn't it be cool to write comic books? And so we started writing comic books together and he would illustrate them and I would write the scripts and stuff. And the whole intention was to amuse these friends who were in the military and kind of give them something. And we would send some stuff off to one friend in particular who would come back and go, wow, you guys are really talented. You should do something with this. This is just awesome stuff that you're writing. And again, I'm sitting there going, huh, that was kind of cool. And that was original stuff. So I just kept doing that and writing until I finally had a novel that I sent off to Jabberwocky. and Jabberwocky is one of the literary agencies. And I sent that to them in 2000.
Oh, that long ago.
Yeah, and got a non-form letter rejection from them. So basically someone took the opportunity at Jabberwocky to not only read the entire manuscript, but to come back to me and say, you know what, you have really good ideas and really good world building, really good concepts, but your writing isn't there yet. And you just need to keep working on it. Don't give up. Keep writing.
And that's not a bad person to get a letter from. Now, was it Joshua Billings? Was it him at the time? Because I know he's the head of that.
I don't remember. I do have the letter somewhere in a file.
Yeah, because as listeners may know, that's Brandon Sanderson's Peter V. Brett and lots of other folks too that are represented through Jabberwocky. So that's pretty good. You know, going back a little bit, tell us a little bit more about the benefits of writing fan fiction as a creative person, as a writer. What are some of the pros of working with fan fiction?
So it depends on who you talk to. There are a lot of people who will poo-poo fan fiction and they don't think that you should ever write it because they don't take it seriously. I personally found it very helpful because I already knew the characters. So especially with Star Trek, I knew Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. I had grown up with them. They were my babysitters. You know, they were there watching over me as I was watching them on the TV. And, you know, because I was that kid of the 70s, I grew up on the street, Sesame Street. And I also had reruns of things like Star Trek and Lost in Space and stuff like that. So for me, it was easier to write those characters, right? I didn't have to do a whole heck of a lot because I already knew them. I didn't have to develop them any further. So it was easier for me to develop other things. And those characters also had very distinct voices. So that taught me how to give characters distinct voices. Because, you know, McCoy is not going to say a line that Spock will say. And Kirk is not going to say a line that McCoy would say. Very distinct.
I think I've never written fan fiction. I've never really read it. I think I would often, when I'd first even heard of it, it was something that I probably looked down upon. However, from a developing point of view, it makes perfect sense because when you are writing, when you are a novelist and you're writing fiction and you're writing your own fiction, there are so many things that you're juggling. Mm-hmm. You know, so by taking on fan fiction, as you said, the characters are already there. The world is already there. It helps you to focus on other aspects of it because there's so many things that go into writing. I look at it as when I'm teaching kids how to play their instruments. You know, it's so difficult because there's so many things going on at once. You know, if you're playing the clarinet, you're reading music. That in itself is three different things because it's reading the pitches and reading the rhythms and then being like, this is an E, it's on the first line. Oh, that's a whole note. You hold it out for four beats. You do the fingerings, you put your thumb in. Your brain's doing five things at once. It's very difficult. So when you can break things down and work on one at a time, it's supremely helpful because otherwise it's overwhelming. And I think with writing, especially if you're a science fiction and fantasy fan, the world building and the character creation is such a huge part of it that you could just get lost in that. I think you've probably heard stories of people that sit there and world build for years and years and years and never actually get around to writing a story.
Yeah, not only that, there's the research thing where, oh, I got to research this and I have to research that and I have to research this. And they just keep going through that. And I met an author a few years ago who was telling me about their book and all the work that they were putting into it. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'd love to read a chapter. And they said, oh, I haven't written anything yet, but I have, you know, 50 notebooks of notes that I've filled with stuff. And I said, you have to stop. You have to start writing.
Now, I mean, look, if your intention is to be a writer, then yes. If you just enjoy the world building, like, go crazy. Hey, have fun. Like, build your world.
But then don't say that I'm a writer. Don't say that I'm going to be published. Because if all you're doing is filling notebooks full of research, you're not writing. You're researching. You're building stuff in your brain. But you have to sit down and write. You have to.
I think there's a bit of a a comparison that could be made. I know when I was learning how to play my instrument, I spent a long time practicing scales and arpeggios and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would never really learn songs or even write songs or anything like that. And I could play the hell out of a scale for you. But it took me a while to get there. And that's okay, because I think there's a couple of years of prep that you have to do before you can do that anyway. But I think it's an equivalent thing. A lot of times you have to just get to writing a story. And I think that's where writing fan fiction can really help, because it's come up with a good story and write it and learn about writing dialogue and all that kind of stuff.
And the results, you know, I wanted to write epic fantasy, and I still want to write epic fantasy. I do. You know, I want to write a lot of different things. But that's where I grew up, and that's what I cut my teeth on is Tolkien and C.S. Lewis and you know, these epic fantasy kind of things. And I wanted to write that, and that's actually what I sent to Jabberwocky was an epic fantasy. And later on, when I started writing this Sam Cain book, and I finally had it to a point where I wanted other people to read it, tying it back to the fan fiction and the voices and the things that I learned by writing those characters, when I delivered this, people were very impressed with the voices of the characters. They were very distinct. They liked the writing. They were intrigued by it. It was good stuff. And that was the reward. That made me feel a lot better, you know, about the time spent on it.
Now, we've known each other for a long time, and one of the, you know, I'm trying to fill in some of your history for myself, because when, I don't know how long we've been doing the podcast now. It's been a long time.
About 30 years.
Yeah. What's the year we started? Was it
2009, I believe.
Nine. Okay. So
may have been eight.
Seven, 8 years, something like that. We've been doing it for a long time. We knew each other for a little bit online before that. But one thing that's come up is how a story that you've mentioned a few times is how you got back into reading fantasy. Mm-hmm. So I guess there was a couple of years where you weren't reading very much. And then you, what's the name of the author? You picked up his book
Dennis
in an airport.
McKiernan.
Right. So I know that that's kind of an important moment for you. So perhaps you can bridge the gap. What year is that when you get back into fantasy? And were you writing the whole time in between the what you just mentioned and when you got back into reading fantasy?
So no, I was not writing. Essentially what happened was, as I have mentioned this before, I worked for my aunt and uncle at a wholesaler in California. And the only reason I went to work there was because I actually wanted to know more about computers. I thought that my path was going to be as some sort of software developer, computer programmer kind of person. I took computer science classes in college to learn how to engineer computers from the ground up kind of thing. And when I was working for my aunt and uncle, my uncle was very against having family work for him. Even though he had family working for him, he didn't like it because he didn't like how to someone who isn't in the family, oh, you know, they would say things like, oh, that person only got the job because they're related and they don't have to do anything and this and that. So he was very hard on family too. He made sure that no one could ever justify saying something like that about him. So if you were family and you worked for him, you worked longer, you worked harder, and you did more than anybody else. So I'm setting that up right now. So he hired me because I could type. And I impressed him over a weekend when they were doing inventory. And so he hired me to come out after school. And my mom encouraged it because his son was a software developer who had gone to the Phoenix Institute of Technology and had learned machine code and language and stuff like that, and was writing software and doing things as part of his job at this company. Like, he was writing the software that helped run the company, like the accounting software and all this kind of stuff. This is before a lot of that stuff existed for small businesses. So she really wanted me to work with him and learn from him, and I wanted that opportunity as well. Eventually, I became the system admin for that company, among other things that I was doing. And my family, for the most part, don't get me at all. They don't understand the comic books. They don't understand the science fiction, the Star Wars, the Star Trek. Not very supportive of any of that stuff. That's just not who any of them are. One of my closest family members is 7 years older than I am and would tell me, ah, space shit. I just don't like space shit. So there was a lot of pressure at that job to, quote unquote, grow up. You need to grow up. You need to get rid of this stuff, the kid stuff, you know, all that. And so at the time, I had written a novel that was my first attempt at an original novel, but that was sort of an homage to the X-Files. It was about science fiction-y kind of stuff. It was about, you know, the Men in Black and where they actually came from. And it was this time-traveling guy who is a clone and wakes up in a hospital in Vegas with no memory of who he is or what he or where he came from. And there was all this science fictional kind of stuff in it, and I thought it was a good novel. But and I gave it to some family, and they just didn't care. And so that was very, how do I want to put it? That was very discouraging for me. And so they were pressuring me to give it all up, and so I did. And I put on the khakis and the collared shirt, and I went into work every day. And that's what I did for several years, probably 95, 96 through 99. I didn't read much, and I didn't write hardly anything. And my uncle had a series of heart attacks, and there was talk of what to do with the company. His sons had both gotten out of it. His daughter didn't want it. He looked at me and thought if I was a little bit older, he would give me the reins and have me run it for him. But because I wasn't, he decided just to sell it. And he sold it to someone else. And they came in, and I was the only family member still there. And they said that I either needed to take a pay cut or work more. And at the time, I want to say I was working like 7 to 7, Monday through Saturday. And it just, there was no way, just no way. So I called up one of our vendors and I said, look, I'm looking for another job. And I was curious if you had anything. And they said, yeah, absolutely. We'll hire you right now, but you have to move to Tennessee. And I said, okay, that was a huge change for me. I'd lived in California for most of my life at that point. And moving to Tennessee was kind of scary, but I thought at the same time, maybe this is what I need, you know, to kick my butt and get me doing something different. And that job involved being on the road a lot. And I had a computer and a laptop, and it had Word on it, unfortunately. And and yes, I forgot my book, which I had gotten into reading things like Tom Clancy and Grisham and you know, thrillers and that kind of stuff that are kind of spy-fi-y, but not really science fiction or fantasy. And as I was running through the Atlanta airport trying to catch a flight, this is before 9/11 when you could run in an airport, and I needed a book to read because it was going to be a long flight. And I just saw a dragon on the cover and thought, hey, I used to love those. And I picked it up, and it was Dragon Doom by Dennis L. McKiernan, and that made me remember how much I loved that stuff. And it also made me think, why the hell did I give it up? Why? It makes no sense. And that was 99. And I started reading fantasy again a lot, and I loved it, and it was just wonderful. And I thought, why did I give this up? And I have this laptop. And so whenever I would travel to these cities, part of my job was I was not allowed to be friendly with the people, because I was an auditor. I was essentially an inventory auditor. And I had to go and I had to call these people liars and say, you know what? You reported that you have this inventory and you don't actually have it. And you can't do that if you're friends. So I spent a lot of time alone. And I just started writing, and I wrote this novel. And this is the advice for anybody out there. Never do what I did. I wrote a novel and then I printed it and sent it to Jabberwocky.
No editing, no second draft.
No editing, no nothing. But to my credit, or to their credit, they liked it, and they came back and said, you know, don't stop, keep going. You're going to be there.
So there's a couple of years where you're not. Would you say like 4 or 5 years where you kind of stopped reading and stopped like reading fantasy? So 99 is when you get back on the horse and you start your writing. So now you're reading a lot of fantasy, and now you're working away on your laptop. So what are the next few years like? Because I believe, so now we're talking 99. Mm-hmm. So you and I meet online, I don't know, 2008, something like that. So what are the ensuing years? Because I think we both got on Twitter at about the same time, 2008, I believe. I mm-hmm. think it's about then. And I know I had already been, I just started like putting some of my music out. So I don't know if that was 2007. It may have been at the earliest for me, but let's use 2008 as our guide. So now you have almost 10 years there. What's going on in that period in terms of your writing development, other than just working at it all the time? Is there any particular steps where you were seeing improvement? Were you doing writers groups? Were you sending stuff out? Like what's going on during that time?
Trying to remember when I first joined a writer's group. I kept writing. I just kept writing. And kind of like with me learning guitar, I kept it to myself. It was for me. I didn't really go out and say, here, look at this, or here. You know, and I never did short stories. I never tried. I mean, it was immediately I was writing novels. And I was writing epic fantasy. So the novel that Jabberwocky sent me the rejection letter on, I rewrote a couple times. And I remember I would, we talked to Kristen Britain not too long ago, and I keep wanting to say Britain, but Kristen Britain, I, like her, I would sit in bed and I had this wood tray thing. I don't know if you remember those, like, and you would sit your laptop on them, or they were really for breakfast in bed kind of shit. But I had one of those and I would sit my laptop on it and I would just sit there. And when I would get home on the weekend, again, because of the constraints of my job, I essentially, and being an introvert, I moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, where I knew no one and I never made any friends. And I would just sit at home and write. And that's what I did when I was there. I just wrote like constantly, and I would rewrite and I would print pages and I would look at them and I would redo them. And I just kept rewriting that novel to the point where I thought, I need to walk away from this and I need to do something different. And I was buying tons of books at Barnes & Noble. There was a Barnes & Noble not far from my apartment in Knoxville. And I went in after that McKiernan book and I said, what else does he have? And unfortunately, he didn't have a lot that was in print at the time, which led me to write him a letter going, what the hell? Why aren't your books in print? Thinking that was going to go into, you know, the North Pole, Santa Claus bin, because, you know, that stuff never actually gets to the author. No, he replied. He sent me a letter and he's like, yeah, I'm really sorry. I'm working on it. You know, give me some time. And now we're Facebook friends. So there you go. But I started looking at the fantasy books out there and I was looking, I was very into fantasy because, you know, Lord of the Rings was one of my favorite things. And so I just kept looking for more things like that. And I found Terry Brooks and I found Robert Jordan and I found, oh, what's his name? Good Kind. And you know, I found a lot of male authors, obviously.
Ellie Modisette, was that?
Ellie Modisette was one of the ones that I found. And then I started seeing like CJ Shara and these other authors she wrote the Avalon book. Mercedes Lackey, but I did find Mercedes Lackey. Oh my gosh, I can't remember her name. But I started finding all these other authors and I would always look for more than one book. I always wanted like there to be a couple of books. And I started reading those. And as I'm reading them, I'm going, wow, these people are really, really good. And the way they write is completely different from how like C.S. Lewis wrote and how Tolkien wrote and even how McKiernan writes. And then I started thinking they're also different from how Clancy writes, but Clancy writes these huge, big, thick novels, just like Robert Jordan writes these huge, big, thick novels, but they're different. And I started realizing different styles of writing and how they're doing their world building and all this kind of, and I felt like I needed to amp it up. And so then I wrote a book called Evermist, which I was intentionally trying to copy Ellie Modisette and kind of do a little bit of what he does. And so I wrote that book. And then one day I just thought, I'm going to try something different. And I started this story about a cop who is having some issues. And then I kind of put it away because I didn't like it. And I thought, well, maybe I should write a thriller. And I just kept kind of farting around and flirting with the edges of fantasy and epic fantasy. And then stuff happened. I moved to Chattanooga, and I'm living in Chattanooga for a couple of years. And then the company I was working for there went belly up. And my family says, hey, come to Denver because we're all here. And so I moved to Denver. And then I thought, wow, you know, Denver's a great setting. And I kind of went back to this idea, this cop who's having some problems. And I wrote Samantha Cain Into the Fire, like the first draft, I want to say in 2005 or 2006. And then I became aware of the whole urban fantasy. Like, it's like I did it backwards. I wrote it, and then I found out about urban fantasy. And so I started looking at it.
That was the question I was going to ask. Is this pre-Butcher in terms of your reading a book? Is this pre-Butcher?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then I read Butcher. And I'm like, oh, this is funny. And I didn't have any humor in my books at all. None of my books had humor in them. They were all very serious. I thought you had to take this stuff serious. Like, it had to be very serious. And so I thought, well, I can – and I realized Butcher is reminding me of Spider-Man. Spider-Man is a wisecracking superhero, and Dresden is a wisecracking superhero. Little did I know how much Butcher was into comic books and that kind of stuff, which I found out later. But it told me that I could put humor into these things. And so I kind of started rewriting it. And I rewrote it with more of my sense of humor. And I put more of me in it. But at the same time, I realized that I was writing a man with breasts kind of thing. Like, she wasn't herself. And I didn't know what to do or how to fix that or how to write a female character better. And I started playing this game called World of Warcraft. And I started hanging out with role players on Earthen Ring, on the Alliance side. Please forgive me. And it was very interesting to work with these role players and kind of do these stories. And I rolled a paladin, and I started hanging out with these essentially college kids. I didn't know they were college kids at the time, but they were college kids. And role playing with them every night, and it was a lot of fun, and we were just having a great time. And then we all got really tired of Alliance, and I know this is a really long story, but we got tired of Alliance, and overnight our entire guild just shut down, and we moved to Horde, and we rolled all new characters, and I rolled a character called Mordecai. And one of the things that I had noticed in the role-playing is that people, adults were very careful of who they role-played with because they didn't want to role-play with kids and accidentally say or do something to someone who was a minor because they didn't want to do that. So I decided to make a character that would never have to run into that because he was going to be the biggest dick in the world and he was going to treat people like shit and he was going to be evil. And I rolled this undead mage called Mordecai. And I made him as evil as possible to the point where he would poison his guildies and blackmail them. He would do all kinds of horrible things to them. And people loved it. And they loved him as a character. And I role-played him for quite some time, and people would always want to interact with him. And when we brought new people into the guild, it was almost like a rite of passage that they had to pass through the Mordecai gauntlet, which is Mordecai just shows up and be a dick to them and just treats them horribly. And they're laughing the entire time, and they join the guild. It was hilarious. I don't know. I don't get it. And one of my guildies and I were talking. As part of this guild, we would write role-playing stories and we would post them on the Earthen Ring forums. And I would write these stories and people loved them as well. And they would boost them on the forums. And one of my guildies says, you don't put a lot of female characters in there. I said, yeah, I know. I'm struggling with female characters. And she said, well, why don't you roll one? And I said, what? And she said, well, roll a female character and role play her and see what happens. And I'm like, no, I can't possibly do that. That'd be weird. That'd be awkward. And she's like, no, just try it. Try it and see what happens. And I thought, all right. And so I rolled a female troll that I named Jaluli. And I role played her for a really long time. And I got into it and I got really good. And new people did not know that there was a guy you know, behind her. But that taught me a lot about, number one, how the female characters were perceived by the male characters in the game. As an example, no one ever came up to Mordecai or my paladin and said, hey, here's 50 gold. Have fun. But Jaluli had people walk up to her and say, hey, here's 50 gold. Have fun. And I'm like, that was weird. And I just role-played her for the longest time. And then I sat back down with Sam Kane and I rewrote the book again. And I tempered the humor. I didn't make it all about me. I specifically did things that I wanted so that people understood this was not me. There's still some me in there, and there's a lot of humor in it because it's an urban fantasy and she's a smartass. But she's not really the nerd. She's adjacent to the nerd. The nerd is her best friend, and her best friend drags her along and makes her watch Star Trek and makes her play role-playing games. And she kind of enjoys it, but it's not really her thing. But she does it anyway. And I rewrote that character in the book with these things in mind that I had learned, and it just got better. Just got better. And does that make sense? I mean, like how that genesis of that and how that all kind of evolved?
It's really interesting because I didn't know a lot about it. A couple things. First of all, you're totally describing that period in your life where you're putting your 10,000 hours in, because there's this span of years where you're hacking away at it. And I think everybody has to go through that. We've certainly talked about that number many times over the years. And so now I know the story of your 10,000 hours. I know the story of your writing fan fiction as practice. And now I know the story of the way that, even though that wasn't your intention, but how you stumbled upon a way to practice voicing a character, a female character, as a male. And that's genius. I know that's you didn't think about that one day. It's just someone suggested it to you and you did it. And it's like, oh yeah. And what a great idea. I've never heard of anybody doing, I'm sure that's probably been the experience. As we've talked to so many authors over the years, a lot of them are gamers. And I suspect maybe that's a thing that some of them have done before. But I think that's... it makes a lot of sense. It really does. And I could see how that has an impact. So how many rewrites has this book had then? Because it goes back a long time.
It's funny because people ask me that, and it's really difficult to say, John, because I edit as I go. Right. Okay. And so I'll be working on it, and then I'll think, oh, what I really should have done is this. And then I'll start over.
Right.
And so I don't have a good number. I tell people it's been like 6 or 7 or 8 probable drafts. And then one last one where I just like, because I edit as I go, it's difficult to call it a draft, right? Because now I'm editing or I'm re-editing or I'm doing something or I'm changing something. And just a few years ago, I sat down and I said, okay, it's time to rewrite it completely. And so I sat down with a blank project in Scrivener, and I had my last draft open, but I didn't copy and paste anything. I rewrote. I wrote every line again. And as I was going through, I made a ton of changes, and I really cleaned it up, and I streamlined it, and I figured out things that I hadn't figured out before, and I fixed things that I didn't realize were broken. When I talk about trying to make her different from me, there's definitely some things that are the same. She has a brother who's 13 years older than her. I have a brother that's 13 years older than me. Her family moved from Chicago to Colorado because, someone shot her brother. We moved from Chicago to California for many different reasons, but one I've never been able to confirm with my mom, but that I've always suspected, is that we moved because my brother was shot one day. And I remember her having to rush to the hospital because he had been shot in the ear. And next thing I know, we're moving. So I've always suspected, but it's one of those things where my mom won't talk about. she has an Irish Catholic family. I have an Irish Catholic family, but hers is huge. Mine is not. So, you know, there's little things like that that I built into her. I specifically wanted differences, though. So where you know that I love blues. You know that I love blues. One of the things that I can't particularly stand is disco. So she's a massive disco fan. To the point where, you know, I had some lyrics in the book that the publisher wanted me to take out. Because,
were they actual disco song
lyrics?
Yes,
they were disco song lyrics, and they were a little worried about copyright on that versus fair use. And so I did have to change that up a little bit. But yeah, you know, you're not wrong. I think it is a unique path to learning how to write a specific kind of character, like a female character. And I think it worked better because of World of Warcraft. You do have a little anonymity.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think this is good too, because it seems like all of this, you didn't make some master plan like I will learn how to write female characters this way, and then I will learn to. It was very organic. It was based on things that you were interested in, that you were doing anyway. You loved Star Trek, so you read all those Star Trek books, and then you end up writing Star Trek fan fiction. Okay, makes perfect sense. You know, you liked video games and role playing games, so you did that. So it all ties together, and I think that can only help make your art better. So how does this, you know, you've been sitting on this for a while. You've done many passes through it. We'll say that. Tell us the story of how it finally gets published through WordFire. How does that happen for you?
So I went the traditional route, and this is what ties back to being nice and being a good person and just, you know, being respectful of other people, which is something I've always tried to do. When I talked about I'm ready, you know, I've taken this through critique groups, I've gotten it where I want it to be, I'm ready. I got a lot of private messages from published authors that we have met through this podcast and through the SF Signal podcast and through the conventions that I go to, basically saying, you know what, I would love to see the first chapter. Can you please send me the first chapter? And I did that, and I sent it off to a lot of people who came back and said, you know what, this is really good. I would like to introduce you to such and such being an agent. And so I got a lot of personal recommendations to agents. And I was flabbergasted by that and floored and humbled. But it was also very exciting because that's an extra step in the door for an agent, you know, to get a personal recommendation from someone that they represent. And I sent the book around to some people and did query letters. And I had agents who were interested, and one of them asked to represent me and unfortunately was not able to place the book anywhere. But the feedback that he got, there was no feedback really. It was just that we're not interested at this time kind of thing. No one said, oh, this is a god awful book, you know, please burn it. But nor did they say, hey, this is really great, we just can't do anything. It's just the same answer over and over and over again. So that was kind of frustrating. And I have already written a draft of the second book. And I had outlined the third book for him. And he, you know, he tried to sell it as a trilogy, doing what he called the Kevin Hearn method, which was sell the trilogy all at once and have them kind of come out. His concept was, we'll do a book a year for the next 3 years, and they'll all come out and they'll be ready to go. And just, you know, no one was interested. And that was at the time when urban fantasy was kind of dying a little bit, and people were interested in space opera and different things as The Expanse and some other things. And John Scalzi were kind of coming up with Old Man's War and different stuff. And so that kind of died on the vine. And so I actually sent him a letter and said, you know what, I very much appreciate you trying as hard as you did, but I'm going to pull this back and thank you for the representation at this time. And if I come up with something else, I'll let you know. And I had talked to the folks. I met the folks from WordFire Press at several different events and just kind of started talking to them a little bit. And it took another like a couple of years for them to say, hey, we're interested in this and we want to do something with it. And I was excited and thought that was awesome. You know, it's another great opportunity. And they looked at it and almost immediately came back and said, yeah, we want this. We want to publish this. And we kind of went back and forth a little bit on some of the particulars, including the cover, which I said, you know, at this point, I kind of wanted to take control of my own writing destiny. And I said, you know, what are our options on the cover? Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, a book lives or dies on its cover. Because that's what really grabs you and grabs your attention. And you see that cover and you go, oh, wow, this is really cool. And they said, well, you know, we do our own covers. We don't have a huge budget to like go out and grab like John Picasso to do your cover. But we do our own covers. We also allow writers, if they want to, they can commission their own cover and do the cost themselves. And they said, I want to do that. And they said, okay, you know, but we still have right of refusal. You know, if you come up with something really weird, I'm like, okay. And, I reached out to Galen and we had a back and forth and she was really excited. And I was really excited. And we squeed together and she sent a sketch that I sent to Kevin J. Anderson at WordFire. And I said, this is her sketch. And he was blown away just by the sketch and said, yeah, absolutely, move forward. And so we got the cover secured and we went back and forth with, you know, edits and all that kind of stuff. And it hit and dropped over Superstars weekend. Which is the big writing seminar that WordFire is part of. And it's also in the Bane bundle, which is awesome. So, you know, it's part of Bane, Bane's website. And so, yeah, it does that answer your question?
It does. Yeah. No. Well, because, you know, I'm just trying to fill in the history. But I'm very proud to be associated with you. I'm really happy for you. I know it's been a long process getting here. And so for me, just because I've lived through some of this process with you, obviously doing the show every week, and you've updated me on some of these things, but I'm like, well, there's a beginning to that story that I don't really know. I know a little bit here and there, what he mentioned, all that. So to me, I was just really interested in finding out what a little more of that story. And I'm sure there's way more to it than that, but I think our listeners would too, because again, if someone that's been listening to this show, maybe since the beginning, yeah, they've heard little things here and there about your writing career and your process and everything like that. So I think a lot of them would be curious to hear about that. And I hope a lot of them are curious to go and get your book too. Hey, look, everybody, the better Patrick does, the better we can keep doing this podcast too.
Well, so, it's interesting because, you know where I work and there's not really anybody there that I would think of as being interested in science fiction and fantasy. And I went ahead and sent out an email to everybody at my office and said, hey, look, you know, some of you know that I have this double life and I'm a novelist and I write stories and I've got a book out and here's the links to where you can buy it. And I have confirmed that 5 people at the office bought a copy of the book. You know, they sent me screenshots of them, you know, of the purchase screen and stuff and said, hey, we're buying your book. And someone said, I don't know if you know this, I love wizards. And I read the synopsis and I was like, holy crap, I want to read this. I said, I had no clue that you were wizards. And so, you know, for 5 people at my office to buy the book, that's incredible.
That's a good sign. It's a good sign. And I know a bunch of us online have already bought it. I know Fred bought it.
Yep. Rob bought it. Yep. Yeah. Bunch of people.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited to get into it. And congratulations.
And as with all things, like just like with the podcast, you know, if someone out there has bought the book, the single best thing you can do for me and for the book is to give it a couple stars and write something on Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, that helps more than you can possibly imagine.
Yes. Yes. So that'll be, once I'm done reading it, I will certainly star it and review it on Amazon and in other places to help out there.
And it's on Barnes & Noble as well. So
sweet. Yeah. I know. I should mention that because I know you have like I just always end up linking to the Amazon link, but I know it's available at, sure, as you said, as part of Barnes & Noble and the Bane bundle and all that. Do the WordFire books end up in physical stores at all?
Sometimes,
or is it mostly just online? No, okay.
Yeah.
So they
have the distribution. The
Okay. Well, I will keep an eye out because I will be excited if I spot them.
And if you're at a big Comic-Con like Emerald City or something like that, and they have physical copies, usually they're out on the table as well.
Sweet.
So that's another great way that you can find them. So yeah, you know, it just depends on, and hopefully this one does well enough that they buy the second one. because they only do one book at a time usually.
Yeah.
And they wait and see. And I also do want to do an audiobook of this. And I'm working on that myself with someone and to get it to WordFire and get an Audible kind of thing mm-hmm. done for it. So that's something else that I hope will come soon.
Awesome. Well, I think that is a nice place to wrap it up. I think, well, hopefully now you all know more about Patrick Hester and his journey, his hero's journey to getting published. I play the part of the wizard in it. I'm the old one, the wizard, even though I think Patrick's like a couple months older than I am. So, but I'm the old one. I'm the wizened. Anyway, but yeah, go and check out. It is, once again, it's Into the Fire. It is Samantha Cain, book one.
You know, the second book I want to call it?
What's that?
Cold as Ice.
Oh, nice. See, I think you can just continue with names of Dawkins songs. Well, Cold as Ice is a Foreigner song. That's good. So Into the Fire is a Dawkins song. You could do it In My Dreams. That's a Dawkins song. You can have...
Cold as Ice.
Yes. So you could do that. But anywho. Oh, you know, just because we didn't get... Patrick, I think that was the most focused any of our conversations have ever been. And I prevented myself, but I'm going to mention this at the end. I don't know if you heard, because you mentioned the Butcher books and you... I know you're a big fan of James Marster's audio. I don't know if you saw, but in Hulu is doing a show, The Runaways, which is based on the Marvel Comics mm-hmm. property. And James Marsters is playing one of the adults that's like the parents of like the kids in it mm-hmm. that are the Pride, which is like the villain. I never read that comic series. I always heard good things
Joss
about
Whedon
it.
Did it, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe he did. Yeah. Anyway, Hulu's doing a TV show based on that, and James Marsters is one of the actors cool. that's going to be on that. So I had to prevent myself. I'm like, no, don't get off topic, John. Don't get off topic. But Patrick's going to think that's cool.
It's funny because I do like him, and I like how he reads the Butcher books. Like seeing him acting trips me up. Because I'm so used to him being Spike, and I don't want to be that person that like pigeonholes him into a role.
Yeah,
and so I want him to have more roles, but it's just weird when I see him in something and he's got an American accent and he's American. It's not like he's British, but like I want him to have that British accent. I want him to be Spike, and then I have to turn that off in my brain and go, look, dude, he's an actor and he can do other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, good. I'm glad we got off topic a little bit, at least at the end, because after this big, wait a minute, they were focused for like 45 minutes. What? All right, everybody, go buy Patrick's book, okay? That's it. And if you want, you can do it on Patreon. You can back us on Patreon too. But yeah. For this week, go buy Patrick's book, okay? All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.